Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, October the 20th, 2017. And I'll start with the article with the headline, Georgetown Police Arrest Man in Connection with Murder. Dateline Georgetown. Georgetown Police arrested a man Thursday in connection with the death of a 21-year-old male who had been reported missing earlier in the week. Police have not released the name of either man. Police said Thursday night they had interviewed a person of interest Wednesday in relation to the missing male. The man under questioning was arrested on an unrelated matter. During another interview with the man Thursday, police said he confessed to killing the male who had been reported missing. The Georgetown Police Department, Vermilion County Sheriff's Department, and the Illinois State Police went to a location at West 15th Street given by the arrested man and found the remains of a male. Police continue their investigation and no other information is available. And now an article with the headline, Fired Food Chief Faces Theft Trial. Detective says Lizelle demanded employees reimburse him $22,000. Dateline Danville. A Danville police officer testified on Thursday that Danville Schools' now fired food service director demanded and received a minimum of $22,000 in cash reimbursements from five people he supervised for purchases he allegedly made on behalf of the district over a three-year period. Detective Ralph Dunham's testimony came at a preliminary hearing for Greg A. Lizelle, who was charged in September with one count of theft of government property between $10,000 and $100,000, a Class 1 felony. Vermilion County Circuit Judge Charlie Hall found probable cause to try Lizelle on that charge, as well as one count of official misconduct and five counts of intimidation, all Class 3 felonies. The 51-year-old Danville man, through his attorney, Dave Ryan, pleaded not guilty to the charges. A pre-trial hearing was set for November 20th. Lizelle, who is free on $100,000 bond, faces 4 to 15 years in prison if he is convicted of the most serious charge. Lizelle ran the Food Service Department from April 2011 until the Danville School Board approved putting him on unpaid leave 2 days before the criminal charges were filed. He was fired the following week. Under questioning by Assistant State's Attorney Scott Ripley, Dunham said he was assigned to look into purchases made by Lizelle. The detective acknowledged that they were made at Lowe's and other stores throughout the community using school district accounts. Some purchases Lizelle took with him and others were delivered. Dunham also acknowledged that Lizelle made a habit of going to five female employees and demanding that they reimburse him for the purchases in cash for the lunch accounts from September 1, 2014 through September 1, 2017. They felt they were required to do so, Dunham said of the employees, who include secretaries, cafeteria supervisors, and head cooks. When Ryan asked Dunham how he came up with the $22,000 figure, the detective said through the ledgers kept in the lunchrooms and provided to the superintendent. When Ryan asked if any of the items his client allegedly purchased were recovered, Dunham answered yes. Also at the hearing, Hall ordered Lizelle to not have any contact with the employees he allegedly intimidated. And the next article has the headline, A Sanitary District Hires City Official as Director. Dateline Danville. Danville Public Works Director Doug Ahrens has been selected as the new Danville Sanitary District Director to start December 18th. The Sanitary District's board voted Tuesday for Ahrens to replace Shelley Kors. Ahrens' salary will be $110,000. Kors, formerly Shelley Cumbo, married Ben Kors this past summer and will be moving to his native Netherlands. She says she looks forward to retiring and traveling, but she will be coming back here often to visit her grandson and family. Shelley Kors said she plans to stay on board at the Sanitary District through the end of March in the transition and intermittently in the second quarter. Kors has been director since 2016. She has worked for the district since she was 17 years old. She became director last year when An early retirement program was offered, and Director Todd Lead retired. Lee had served as director since 2010. Prior to him was Jerry Connolly, who served as in the director role since January 2007, and Phil Morgan had been director from 1979 to 2007. Kors said a conversation with Ahrens led to him joining the sanitary district. It started as a conversation and went on from there, she said, adding that timing is everything. She said they had talked to different candidates but had difficulty 2 years ago finding people, including someone to come to Vermilion County. Kors said she ended up staying on and serving as director. This is the best of both worlds, Kors said about Ahrens. He is a lifelong resident, and he brings a wealth of public entity experience, knowledge of collection systems, and familiarity with the billing system, Danville Industries, and local officials, she said. This learning curve is so much easier, she said. This was a great fit for us, Kors added. He's going to be here for the long haul. He said he's seen the collection side of it and been on the public side of it. He also has knowledge of the statutes and regulations and bidding processes. Kors said Ahrens will have to learn the treatment process. We're very pleased, she said, adding that the board also is happy with Ahrens. Ahrens will oversee the sanitary district's wastewater treatment plant on Grape Creek Road, which has a staff about 18, working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The Danville Sanitary District serves all of the corporate limits of Danville, in addition to a few locations outside city limits, and it has a direct connection with KIK Custom Products. The Sanitary District is governed by state rules and statutes, including the Environmental Protection Agency. The Vermilion County Board appoints its local board trustees. In 2016, Danville Public Works Service and Operations Manager Ray Garcia's position was renamed Deputy Director of Public Works, and his salary was increased. Garcia already has been filling in when Ahrens is absent, and Mayor Scott Eisenhower then said city officials are looking ahead to when Ahrens will retire. Ahrens' current salary is $111,129 with the city. Ahrens has been employed with the City of Danville since January 1990. In 2015, the Danville City Council approved an employment agreement to protect him as a mayoral appointment and not lose him to early retirement. The agreement was in effect until April 30, 2019, or it could be terminated by the city or department head. Eisenhower said they will begin outlining the City Public Works Department transition plan next week, so it is too early to comment yet. Ahrens said he's worked with the sanitary district over the years through his work with the city, and he had high regards over its operations and professionalism. He said the new position creates new challenges for him, which he looks forward to. Ahrens said what's interesting to him is having many of the same customers. He also looks forward to the opportunity to serve the city in direct roles in the future, such as volunteer committee work. Ahrens, 53, says he's too young to retire, and he'll be in the same pension fund. It's my goal to work another 8 to 10 years, he said. Ahrens also said, I'm very proud of what we've done in public works. He started with parks almost 28 years ago, and then public works was added to his duties. He said he's been blessed to have a great team, and it's hard to pick favorite projects. Ahrens said he's also appreciative of the local 703 laborers and them making concessions to see improvements. It's been a great team effort, Ahrens said. Ahrens said he's looking forward to a smooth transition with the sanitary district and learning more about its operations. He said he'll have a great group of trustees to work with. The sanitary district will continue to invest in its infrastructure. And the next article has the headline, Bailey Academy Prepares for Fall Festival. Dateline Danville. Kenneth D. Bailey Academy opens its doors to the public every fall for a shopping extravaganza event that also serves as a community fundraiser. Vendors will fill the entire gymnasium at 502 East Main Street during the school's second annual shopping event, which will run from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. October the 28th. It's a great way for families to get a head start on Christmas shopping and support the school and community organizations, Principal Tracy Cherry said. We'll have more than 22 or 23 vendors. Excuse me, some people are still getting their information to us, she said. We can accommodate additional vendors until next Wednesday, that's October the 25th. In addition to shopping, another attraction at the event will be the raffling of gift baskets and bidding in a silent auction. We're going to raffle off gift baskets, and we have a big one called Family Fun Hotel, she said. Cherry said the gift basket includes one night at the Danville Sleep Inn, carry-on luggage, beach towels, pool toys, and pizza delivery, all provided by local businesses and Bailey Academy staff. There will be several gift baskets raffled and several silent auction items to bid on, she said. Proceeds from the raffle ticket sales and vendor booth rental at the event will benefit the Vermillion County Rape Crisis Center and Bailey Academy. The biggest thing about the event is we're raising money for the Rape Crisis Center, Cherry said. We're excited to partner with them because they support our school. The proceeds also will help supplement activities at the school so our students get to participate in field trips, and also will help purchase classroom materials. It's our only big fundraiser, and it helps us put on our annual Thanksgiving meal, she added. Students from Bailey Academy, as well as Lincoln's Challenge and Rantoul, will lend a hand during the event. Students volunteer Friday night to help the vendors set up, Cherry said. They also will help carry purchases out on the day of the event, so that's nice. In addition to the more than two dozen vendors selling their wares, parents are invited to bring their children to the school for some holiday fun during the event. Children will have the opportunity to trick-or-treat and receive candy from the various vendors. Families can come with their kids because the vendors will have Halloween candy for them, Cherry said. We are excited to provide the children of Danville a safe and fun place to come and trick-or-treat. Citizens for Animal Rescue and Adoption, that's CARA, C-A-R-A, will bring pets to the event, and Bailey Academy's print shop students will be on hand to take orders for posters. Food will also be available for purchase during the event, including backdoor pizza for $1 a slice and kettle corn. Scott Strauser of Hoopston will be at the event selling a variety of holiday decor. Other vendors include the following businesses: 31 Gifts, Avon, Bam Bags and Bling, Fancy That Prom Clothing and Accessories, Larry's Drones, Lip Sense, LuLaRue Clothing, Mary Kay Cosmetics, Origami Owl, Paparazzi, Parade of Gypsies, Party Light, Rada Cutlery, Scentsy, Stamping Up, Tish's Tutus, Hair Bows and More, Tupperware, Watkins, Young Living Essential Oils, and more. There will be a good variety of items for people to purchase, clothing, jewelry, plants, flower, and Christmas items, Cherry said. There will be something for everyone. We hope people will come out and support our fall festival, she said. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Cliff Cundiff, 53, of Danville, who died on October 17th at Altman Hospital in Canton, Ohio. A celebration of Cliff's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 20th, 2017, at Sunset Urbis Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville. That celebration is actually today. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. prior to the service. Burial to follow at Songer Cemetery, Tilton. And the next is for John Frazier, 70, of Danville, who died at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, October 17th. Funeral services will be at 6 p.m. Saturday, tomorrow, at Sunset Urbis Funeral Home, 414 South State Street, Westville. Pastor James Blue will officiate. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday at the funeral chapel. And the next is for Connie Lee Gill, 65, of Danville, who died on Thursday at Presence United Samaritan Medical Center, Danville. Arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin. And the next is for Steve Minchell, 61, of Hoopston, who died at 12:10 p.m. Thursday, October 19th at Carle Foundation Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. And the next is for Frederick Tabor Jr., 57, of Hoopston, who died on Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. And the next is for Constance Ambrose Marshall, 89, who died on October 10th in Westville. True to her longtime wish, she died at her father's favorite season. A celebration of Connie's life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday. Excuse me. October 21st at Sunset Urbis Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville, with Father Loftus officiating the service. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. today, Friday, at the funeral home with a rosary prior to the visitation at 5:30 p.m. Burial will be in Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery, Westville. Memorial donations may be made to Westville Public Library. And the next is for Aud H. McMullen III, 75, of Danville, who died on Monday, October 16th, at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral services at noon on Saturday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin with Pastor Mick Filitsky officiating. Burial at the Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. till service time on Saturday at the Robeson Chapel. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Hospital in memory of Jenna McMillan. And the next is for Candace Lynn Roina, that's R-O-I-N-A, 50, of Westville, who died on Sunday, April 15th. A celebration of her life will be held at 3 p.m. Sunday, October 22nd at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville, with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Visitation will be held at from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday prior to her service. Memorial donations may be given to the family for final expenses. And the next is for Terry Wayne Gurney, 69, of rural Kingman, Indiana, who died on Wednesday, April 18th at Presence USMC. Funeral services will be at 10:30. That's today. Sorry, were held today at 10:30 Eastern Time. That's October 20th, 2017, at First Baptist Church, Covington, Indiana, with Andy Harkle Road officiating. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery. Visitation was from 8 a.m. until time of service at 10:30 a.m. Memorials may be made to the American Diabetes Association, First Baptist Church, American Legion, or VFW. And the next is for Robert V. Bob Fox, 90, of Danville, who died at 8:14 p.m. Thursday, October 12th at Hawthorne Care Center in Danville. Services will be, services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, October 27th at First Presbyterian Church, 100 North Franklin Street, Danville. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 26th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery, Danville, followed by a celebration in Bob's honor at American Legion Post 210. And the next is an article with the headline, Delorier, it's spelled capital D-E, capital L-A-U-R-E-R, loves to see kids succeed. The fifth grade students in Tanner DeLaurier's class at Southview Upper Elementary School have turned a lot of pages since the beginning of school, everything from Huckleberry Finn to Harry Potter. DeLaurier, who shares his students' love of all things Harry Potter, has created a Harry Potter-themed library at the back of his classroom, where a banner announces, "Reading is magical." Magical is spelled M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L. Shelves of books invite students to delve into the pages and explore different subjects just for fun. "Reading makes you smarter," his student Lakota Smith said. "If you can read, you'll do better in other things like math." DeLaurier, who is in his fifth year of teaching fifth grade in Danville 118, is one of five district employees and volunteers who will be honored by the Illinois State Board of Education at an awards banquet set for Saturday, October 28th at the Bloomington Normal Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 301 Broadway Street, Normal. He will receive an award of excellence in the early career educator category that is limited to educators statewide who have been teaching for 5 years or less. Brenda Yoher, District 118, Director of Educational Support, said DeLaurier is deserving of the new teacher award. "I've watched him grow, and he's taken on so many tasks and roles," she said. "He's able to capture the students' attention and spark their interest in learning," Yoho said. Most of how DeLaurier runs his classroom is based on AVID, Advancement Via Individual Determination, which holds students accountable to the highest standards and provides them with academic and social support so children will rise to the challenge. "This is an AVID school, so we use quite a few AVID strategies," he said, "of the program that helps develop critical thinking, literacy, and math skills. For example, they have a lot of freedom in where they choose to sit. We set a lot of goals and have high expectations for them," he said. "We talk about the importance of graduating high school and what we want to be when we grow up," Lakota added. DeLaurier also injects STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics into many of his classroom lessons through the use of iPads and robots. Lakota listed Huckleberry Finn, the U.S. Constitution, James Madison, and the Civil War as a few of the projects she and her classmates have worked on so far in DeLaurier's class. Of course, the Harry Potter project was a class favorite, with students creating marble coasters, a Hurricane Harvey project in which students had to devise a way to eliminate the floodwaters and prevent future flooding, resonated with fifth grader Elijah Davis, who is still eager to talk about it a month later. "I made a big wall that cleans and filters the floodwater and gives them water to drink," Elijah explained, adding he envisioned the wall could be stored underground until it was needed again. The young engineer added that DeLaurier encourages him and his classmates to solve problems and work out snags in their projects. "He gives us a lot of opportunities if we make mistakes," Elijah said. "That's because we learn from our mistakes, right?" DeLaurier said. In addition to his wisdom, the students also were quick to point out that their beloved teacher is funny, nerdy, and reads too much Harry Potter. A favorite classroom activity that occurs once a week is Friday Fun Drawings, in which students randomly select a fun activity to do, such as dancing the chicken dance. It's difficult to imagine that DeLaurier, who has taught 3 years at Mead Park Elementary and now is in his second year at Southview, didn't originally set out to become a teacher. "Growing up, I had thoughts about becoming a teacher because I like helping others," he said. But when he started attending Danville Area Community College, his focus was on computer programming and eventually graphic design and construction management. "Then I realized I didn't want to be behind a desk," he said, changing his mind back to his first love, teaching. "In District 118, I am surrounded by amazing teachers and administrators. We challenge each other and make each other better at what we do," he said. "The kids and the families are great, too." DeLaurier said the best part of being a teacher is the relationships he builds with his students. "I love it when former students come up to me to talk, even the ones I thought maybe I hadn't reached," he said. "I love seeing the kids succeed." And the next article has the headline, "Hoopston Concerned council concerned about building. Dateline Hoopston, city council members on Tuesday discussed the building at 105 East Main Street, which has partially collapsed. The roof caved in and part of the east wall fell October 11th, leaving debris in the streets and the fear that the west wall and front might also fall. The two-block area from First Avenue to Bank Street and the railroad track were blocked off by the city as a preventative in case the rest of the wall should fall unexpectedly. Alderman Bill McElhaney said the whole entire upstairs has come down like it had been on an elevator, adding there was probably a 6-inch gap between the original structure and the facade. The owner, according to the Vermilion County Assessor, is William Thomas. Thomas bought the building at a tax auction and, said McElhaney, is overwhelmed at the loss and expense of taking care of the problem. Attorney Chuck Mockby read the city statute that said an owner of a dangerous building, once notified by the city, had 10 days to fix the problem or the city can step in. Mike Bain, compliance officer, said he served the owner notice on Monday. McElhaney stated he had received 3 proposals to just knock the building down. The proposals were from Allen Decker for $6,000, Silver Brothers for $13,460, and from Terry Glynn Demolition and Excavation of LaSalle, Peru for $12,000. In order for the city to tear down the building, it would have to get an EPA permit and also would be required to have an asbestos inspection. The building problem was referred to the Civic Improvement Committee with a meeting date to be announced. In other council business, council members unanimously approved the ordinance for the sewer lining project based on the new IEPA guidelines, not to exceed $710,000. The new amount includes previous items that had been paid. The original amount approved was $557,045.60. A resolution was also unanimously approved authorizing Mayor Bill Krusenberry to sign the loan documents for the project. Alderman Chad Yaden said that it was illegal to have street corner collections according to the statute, unless a city ordinance allowed it. Discussion followed about the requirements for the collections. More research was suggested. The next Hoopston City Council meeting will be at 7 p.m. November 7th in City Hall. I'm going to start the next article, but it's a very short, I'm going to read it for just a short, very short time. And the title of the article is Senior Back Leads Vikings in Rushing Scoring. Reed Finds a Home. Dateline Danville. Jerry Reed never had any intentions of playing for the Danville Vikings. Reed spent the first 15 years of his life in Topeka, Kansas, and his plans were to play 4 years for the Highland Park Scots. That's where I grew up, he said. My mom still lives there, and 3 of my sisters are there. During his sophomore year, a change was made. Reed moved from his mother's house in Kansas to live with his father in Danville. Honestly, I didn't want to come here. Basically, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing, and it was decided that I needed to move, he said. It was real tough. I had never experienced anything like that, and coming to Danville was completely different. In the process, my grades were not what they needed to be because of what I was going through, so that made it a real tough transition. Eventually, Reed settled into his new life in Danville. His first athletic appearance for the Vikings was a February 5th junior varsity basketball game in Bloomington against the Purple Raiders. Ironically, Reed and the Vikings will host the Raiders in the football regular season final tonight at Ned Weichsel Field. That's kind of sweet, Reed said. It's kind of come full circle for me. In his 2-plus years with Danville Athletics, Reed has gone from a junior varsity competitor to a varsity backup, and now he is one of the leaders and top football players for the 6-2 Vikings. He leads them in rushing yards, 722, scoring 78 points, tied for the lead in interceptions, 3, tied for the lead in pass breakups, 4, and he is second in tackles, 67. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, October the 20th. I look forward to reading with you again soon.